Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Inside College Soccer Podcast. I am joined by some very special guests. We've brought it in-house this time rather than bring external guests on. So we've got the wonderful John and Jed Maloney, the father-son duo, the Morecambe and Wise, the Chuckle Brothers.
Not quite.
So, Jed, John, you all right?
Yeah, good,
Chris, thank you.
Good.
Absolutely fine. After another great event down in Bulmere at the weekend.
There we go. We'll get onto that, don't you worry, Jed. You're desperate to talk about it. Love the enthusiasm. Right, so as we always start with this, we always kind of kick off with a bit of a backstory to kind of find out. I'll give a quick backstory on these two. So these two make it sound like some sort of conflict. John and Jed are obviously son and father, and John leads up the women's side of the company, and Jed is part of that as well, and he's kind of the parental figure, what do you want to call it, that in all of this. So John, do you want to kind of give us a backstory on your kind of career, where you've got to, because obviously you've been to America yourself, and then we'll go from there.
No, definitely. My career obviously started very young. I joined Leeds United at the age of about 8 years old. And it was always at the forefront of my mind that I wanted to be basically a professional footballer here in England. I moved through the ages with Leeds, was luckily enough to be involved kind of when they're at the peak, slowly working the way back there now. So when I was at Leeds, I was there in the Champions League, and I was lucky enough to be kind of ball boy and see them play the likes of Barcelona, Real Madrid, teams like that. And as I say, it was what I wanted to do. All I wanted to do was be a pro footballer. At the age of 16, well, it was the age of 15, really. There was a big change within the academy at Leeds. And at the age of 16, I was sadly released. Obviously, at the time, it was very tough to take, but I think it helped make kind of the person that I am today. Having that setback relatively early on, so I'd gone through the age groups, I'd say, with Leeds, and then it was a case of at 16 trialing a large number of clubs, kind of local clubs, so Grimsby, Bradford, Hull. Went around the clubs and kind of got knocked back, to be honest, at 16. Probably the toughest to take was I went on trial with Leicester City. Basically, the coach and staff at Leeds had moved to Leicester, so I knew the majority of them really well. And we played a couple of friendly games. Funnily enough, I think one of them was against the team that came over from America. And I had one final trial, still remember it today. We played Barnsley, and I was playing right back at the time. And the ball came out to me about 25 yards out on half volley, and I just smashed it in the top corner. And I thought, I've got this sorted. I'll be on a contract at Leicester City, no problem at all. Came to speaking to them afterwards, and I could tell straight away there was something that wasn't right. And they'd actually gone with someone else. So I think out of all the kind of, I guess, rejections of that age, that was probably the toughest to take. And I ended up through a family friend and the physio, Baz Windle, moving to Doncaster at the age of 16, who were in the conference at the time. And as I say, Donny had a really good setup. Left home at 16, moved to Doncaster, moved in with a family there, and spent the next 2 years as a youth team player there. Worked my way through the youth team, and kind of 17, 18, was starting to knock on the door for the first team. And funnily enough, probably after my first year there, I can't remember exactly, I'm sure my dad will probably know a bit more info, but we actually had a guy called Mark Merrick come over from America, who was a Loyola at the time, who was head coach there, and he'd seen me at the exit trials when I was 16 and was really keen to take me over as a student athlete to America. Came down, talked everything through with mum, dad and myself, And as I say, for me at the time, I was just solely focused on making it as a pro. I wanted to be a professional in England. So I kind of, I guess ignored is quite a strong word, but kind of put it to the back of my mind in the fact that I just wanted to make it as a pro in England. So as I say, came to the end of my second year at Doncaster, made my first team debut in front of 10,000 fans when they'd got promoted. And it was an amazing experience. And as I say, that kind of pushed me to wanting to get to that next level as a regular with Doncaster. Again, fast forward a year, I'd been on the kind of the verge of the first team. Doncaster in League One at the time. And I think I probably realised that I wasn't quite at that level, to be honest.
But who was the manager?
Manager was Dave Penny. Assistant manager was Mickey Walker, who I'd come through the youth team with. So I knew Mickey really well, and obviously Dave as well. And Dave had done a great job getting them from the conference up through to League One. I went on loan to York City, who were conference level, and had an amazing experience there. I did 3 months there, played every game, and it was in a team that was struggling, but I guess I felt like I was making an impact, which I really enjoyed.
What position?
No, you're fine. So I was playing centre back at the time.
Yeah.
But played 15 games and scored 4. Ended up second top scorer for the team in the whole season in the end. So it was a mad 3 months, but I loved it. And basically the manager there said, "John, you've done really well. If you get released from Doncaster, just let me know and we'll bring you in." So I thought, brilliant, sorted. And as it transpired, I had a chat with Dave Penny at the end of the season, and he said, "John, obviously it's been a great kind of 3 years. We're just looking to push that next level in the Championship, and we don't think you're of that level." So I thought, you know what, it's probably right, but I've got York to kind of fall back on. So, well, I tried ringing the manager at York 4 or 5 times, never heard back from him. And this was kind of, like, it must have been end of April, early May time. And I was very much like, "Oh my gosh, what am I going to do?" kind of thing. And it was within that probably 7 to 10 day period that I got a call from my best friend, Adam Fraser, who was in America at the University of Montevallo, basically rang me up and said, "John, we really need a centre forward. Fancy coming over?" And as I said, then I'd played the majority of my career at centre half. So centre forward in America sounded like a pretty good deal to me. I spoke with the coach pretty much straight after, and he took me through everything. And I think then I basically went over there because I wasn't really too sure what I was going to do here in England. And it was by far the best decision that I made, both on the football side and obviously with the job that I'm doing today, the dream job as well. A little bit naively going over there. Sorry, just to go back a little bit. So it's 3 months until we were due to go over. And I was due to start, so it was a mad rush. And I still remember my dad sat at a computer late at night, kind of trying to get through the NCAA clearinghouse and all the issues, trying to speak with them.
When you had a Wikipedia page, yeah?
still got the Wikipedia page, Chris, so check it out, guys, if you want to have a quick look.
Edited by Ken Maloney Weekly.
So we kind of left it 3 months, and that's certainly something that I would never tell players to do now, leaving it that late. But we got through, and come the early August, I was over at the University of Montevallo, not really knowing what I was letting myself in for. And a little bit naively, I probably thought it was a bit of a backward step on the football side, but it certainly wasn't. And that's something that, obviously, especially on the men's side, you get a lot of kind of academy players that are released, and they probably look at it as a bit of a backward step. But for me, it pushes you on. Those 3 or 4 years of basically been like a pro and been treated like a pro is an amazing experience. And I had a great 4 years at the University of Montevallo. We had a great team with players from all over, obviously America. We had players from England, Argentina, Brazil, which again, we'll get into a few stories about them as we go through. But probably the first time I realised just how seriously they took, not just men's and women's soccer, but athletics as a whole, I saw what's called a student activity centre. Bearing in mind the University of Montevallo is 2,500 students, so a really small university in the middle of Alabama with no buses, no taxis, anything like that. It's like going back in time, but they just spent $12 million on a sporting complex with basketball arena, massive gym, swimming pool, more physio benches than I'd ever seen, even at Doncaster, who had just got into the championship. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And as I say, we'll talk about it probably more as we go through. But I just had an amazing 4 years and after that 4 years, it was always something I wanted to do, was help players go through what I went through. And I'd come back into full-time work, I think it was probably around 2014, which seems a long time ago now. Just contacted you, just seeing if there was any full-time work. We met up. I got lost in Leeds. Went to the wrong Starbucks. And
showed up in your suit, didn't you? your dad's suit on.
Oversized suit. Wanting to make a good impression, because I knew it's what I wanted to do. And we had a chat, and there was nothing full-time, but I knew that on the women's side, game was starting to grow here. And you were obviously having a few girls apply through the website and stuff like that. I did a bit of research, and there was nothing that was, I guess, dedicated to female footballers. We put our heads together and we came up, obviously, with SR USA Women's Soccer, and it's just continued to grow and grow from there. So as you can probably tell, I could go on all day about this. But
going back a step, though, John, you've kind of missed important parts, and not intentionally, but because you're quite you're not a show off, basically. What sort of awards and stuff did you win in college? Like, I know you did really well, so just kind of big yourself up a little bit. Come on.
Yeah, so the first year was a bit of a transition year, to be honest. I picked up a foot injury halfway through the season, where I followed through on a player and kicked the bottom of his foot, basically. And I don't think I properly recovered for that for the rest of the season. And I remember coach pulled me in. He said to me at the end of that first season, like, you've done well, but I think there's a lot more from you. And I thought, yeah, there is a lot more. So kind of year two, three and four, I really pushed on. I think I was averaging a goal a game kind of over those 3 years.
And as a striker?
As I was striker.
Former centre-back?
Former centre-back, yeah. So I kind of took to playing centre-forward pretty quickly. And as I say, I was involved with a very good team, but like we got to the final four in my third year, which was the first year I was voted Gulf South Conference Player of the Year three times, which no one had ever done before, and I don't think has done since, which then obviously led to I was all region player. So just to give people a bit of background, the region is kind of, I guess, close states that are around the league that you're playing. And by far and away, the biggest honour that I got was the last 2 years I was an All-American, which is obviously kind of the top honour over there. And it's something that we obviously, as you say, I don't like to kind of brag and stuff like that about it, but it's something that I certainly remember and think of very highly. I remember when coach rang me up in my final year and said, John, you've made the first team All-American. And no one within the University of Montebello, I think men's and women's soccer, had ever been first team All-American. So it was a massive honour. And then I kind of, obviously since, I've been voted into the University of Montebello Hall of Fame, which again, going back, and very surreal going back and seeing the university and giving a speech, which I just feel really honoured, to be honest, to have gone through what I went through, the experiences that I went through, and just having a great 4 years on the soccer field.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and also yeah, you got Player of the Decade. You got, I mean, for the conference, you got the Hall of Fame. Like, you can't go any higher than that, really, can you? But
no, it's probably a bit vainly. It's something that I continue to check the records and things like that. As you say, conference player.
Well, checking if anyone's trying to beat you.
Yeah, no one's come close just yet.
It's not vain at all. I'm like there, like, yeah, no, it's not a big head. He doesn't really talk about it, but checks hourly the records.
It's nice just to know, I guess, that you are still kind of remembered on that side of things, and still leading kind of all time in goals in the Gulf South Conference and things like that. But I wouldn't have been able to do it with the great group of players that we had around us. That's for sure at the University of Montebello.
Yeah. All right. So we'll move on to Jed.
Well, just on that last bit, Chris, yeah. If I can add something.
Of course you can.
Because in the context of Sports Recruiting USA, Jonathan had a fantastic reputation with loads of coaches over in the States. So when it comes to him recommending girls for soccer scholarships in America, that credibility he has with coaches is absolutely invaluable. And I think it's a point that's worth making that, you know, coaches are in regular contact with him about the kind of footballer they're looking for, not just next year, but the year after, the year after that.
Yeah.
It was a great 4 years. And really, in terms of my background and girls' football, when I went over there to watch Jonathan play, the girls played before the boys, and the girls were every bit as entertaining as the boys. The standard of football was exceptionally high. And when Jonathan came back, I was very involved in a local club, Harrogate Town, as a director. And I said, we've got to get involved in girls' football. And over a period of about 5 or 6 years, alongside what he was doing at Sports Recruiting USA, Jonathan set up a first team, second team, an under-17s team, the player development centre, an academy, all designed to develop girls' football in Harrogate. And it's been fantastic to see that grow in our own particular area.
And it's thriving. It's still thriving now, isn't it? You passed it on. But it is,
that's right. And I've really enjoyed helping Jonathan in terms of giving a parental perspective for Sports Recruiting USA, because we know it's an absolutely massive decision to go to the other side of the world to play football or soccer. And we know that it's a life-changing, positive life-changing experience. And I mean, we had the event on Saturday, and we had Ella came along, who's had 4 years in America. Then she did a year in Italy. And I was talking to her about her experience. And it's very much reflective of what we hear from all our girls, that it's just a fantastic experience. And it's, the soccer's great. The academics, they're very, you know, it's very important to them. But it's ironic, really, because the iconic picture behind me is the one of Bobby Moore and Pele shaking hands after an England-Brazil game. And if you ask the girls when they come back, what is the biggest thing that's come out of it? It's 19 times out of 20, lifelong friendships that they've got with people throughout the world. And I had that as a parent. I still am in contact with some of Jonathan's old teammates and their parents who I met when we went over there. So it's, you know, when we do the sports recruiting presentation to girls, we have an example of a university that we show. This is, and I often say to Jonathan, you know, don't you think that's just a little bit over the top? But it isn't, because like...
Do you mean you show them, like the top facility ones?
Yeah, we show the University of Tennessee. There's a little video, which is 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is obviously...
You know, 12 million investment at a university of 2,500. And Jonathan was at a championship club in the UK, and it put their facilities to shame. And this was a small university in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the facilities are brilliant. And as a parent, what I try and do is I try and give an accurate picture for parents, because it's an important decision for their daughters.
Jed's gone.
Lost him.
It's just paused. Jed, if you can hear us, we lost you for about 10 seconds there, but...
Have you just lost me?
Yeah, he's lost you. You're back now, Jed.
You're back.
Great.
All right. Well, just on that note, Jed, like, just going back a step. So when John, obviously... So how did it happen? Did the coaches... was it your idea, Jed, or was it John's idea when the first... That Loyola... Was it Loyola coach you spoke to?
Yeah.
Like, where did this whole thing... When he first mentioned, what did you think about it?
Well, I was bang up for it. And... you know, and it's a story again that we talk at events, because I just felt that it was definitely the right thing for Jonathan.
He came even though he's in and around the first team at Doncaster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the guy came to our house, and he was ex-Manchester United, told us all about the opportunity, the sort of thing that we do now. And there's a contract there for you. And, you know, he didn't go. But between you and me, Chris, things with Jonathan, sometimes you have to plant a seed and it takes a while for it to grow. And 18 months later, we had no idea this was happening. He came downstairs, he said, "Mom, Dad, I'm off." I said, "Where?" "America, 3 months." And it was one of those butterfly moments, because again, the reason he got the opportunity was a boy had failed his exams. The university offered him the opportunity to do a summer school to catch up. He didn't take it. So they needed a centre forward. And again, John's a little bit modest in that he started out as a defender at Leeds and Doncaster, but he actually played up front when he was at Doncaster in the reserves and was the top club goal scorer. So he didn't go into that position without knowing what it was all about.
And I think, like a headless chicken.
Well, because he played in defence as well, I used to say to him, "You know, as a centre forward, the centre back last 20 minutes is going to be more tired than you. So get at him." Yeah. And it was great to go over and watch him play. And as I say, same thing as him, we made friends and with both players and parents, and it was great, great experience. And the girls in America are treated exactly the same as the boys. In fact, I would argue in soccer, they're placed a little bit higher, whereas I still think we've got plenty of dinosaurs in the UK that think, you know, football or soccer is not for girls. And over there, it definitely is, no doubt about it. So it's been great to work with girls and give them the same experience that John had. And I mean, I mentioned to you before this meeting started, I started to write down a few things, and it all comes down to the girls. I mean, we had just a little story to make the point. Grace Foyer, somebody who played for us at Harrogate Town. Jonathan signed her on, and
It's gone again.
As soon as you saw her, you knew that she was one, an outstanding player and a leader. And I also felt she was perfect for America. Bit like Jonathan, you know, I just knew her personality, she'd really make a go of it. And she decided she didn't want to go. And we were a little bit disappointed.
Why, just to jump in there, why did she decide she didn't want to go?
She just wanted, her friends were all over in the UK. She had a job that she was going to be going to, a whole host of things.
Right.
And just decided she didn't want. And we kept talking to her about it. 2 weeks before the next showcase, so 11 and a half months on, Jonathan contacted me.
Two days before the showcase.
He contacted me saying, "You're not going to believe it, Dad, but Grace is coming to the showcase." And I was, you know, without making any assumptions, I was so pleased for her. And it was funny, a funny story. What we did that year, because it was before COVID, and it was the last year when we had lots of coaches that came across, and we decided to do like speed dating. So we said, if you want to talk to a girl, you've got 10 minutes maximum, 5 minutes to talk about your university, 5 minutes to talk to the girl, and that's it. And to cut a long story short, Grace was there about 2.5 hours later, still talking to different coaches. She ended up at Embry-Riddle. We speak to her regularly. She didn't play football at all last year because of COVID, but we'll tell you it was the best year of her life until this year. And they started playing. They won the conference last week. And on all the social media and what have you, it brought back loads of memories about what had happened with Jonathan, because they were a great group of lads. But I just thought to myself, we were bang on. And it's great to see in terms of personal development where she was 4 years ago now as a person, as a footballer, and academically she's doing really well, and take a great deal of pride from that. And she's a super girl.
It's great. It's great to be like the catalyst, isn't it? In that kind of, you see it all the time. That's probably one of the best things about the job, is just, you know, it sounds cheesy, but changing the lives.
And she said to Jonathan, didn't she, John? She said, you know, I sat down and I said to myself, if I don't go to this showcase event, I'll regret it for the rest of my life. And it wasn't as if, you know, she definitely knew at that stage she was going to go, but at least she was open-minded enough and thought, I'm going to have a look at it and see what they've got to say. And the rest, as they say, is history. And we always, I mean, she was an RTC player at York. We couldn't understand how she didn't make
We need to get better internet.
Yeah, because just on the pitch, technically she was a real leader, real leader. Yeah. I hope Grace is watching.
Yeah, or listening. It's a bit like Calgary Atwell. Like she was, so that before John came on board, we kind of had a women's event, just kind of forced upon us because there were so many, well, not so many, there was a handful of girls wanting to do it. And so that was like Megan Stowe, yeah. Bella Wilson, Calgary, and yeah, Hannah Fenn, all them lot. So we held it out at Coventry's training ground. It was kind of, well, anyway, it's funny watching it back. me and Tom Butcher, Clinton, E. Young, running it. But like Calgary, she was like, not up for it at all. And I lived in Birmingham at the time. So she lived there. So I said, look, come meet me for a coffee. Let me just talk to you about it. And she had like a Parkland where I used to go. They wanted her. It was like a full tuition scholarship. I was like, what you got to lose? And a friend came with her as well. And a friend, like, I thought would be trying to like make it not go basically, but she was like all about it. And so we kind of sat down. Anyway, by the end of the conversation, probably 2 or 3 hours, she was like, okay, I'll do it. So she went over there and she did really well. And like, it's funny now, like I was watching this morning on Instagram story, she's doing like football freestyle outside the Eiffel Tower. like doing some sort of freestyle thing. And she's, she went there. Then she went to West Florida, was it?
Yeah,
West Florida, and obviously got a degree, and I think she got a master's degree maybe now and stuff like that. So,
well, and Chris, you look back. I mean, I remember seeing AXA Mushtaq on a freezing cold night in Northampton, and we were driving back, and it's the same for all the sports recruiting USA events. We drive back from these events, and there is, you know, it's just like wow, the girls were outstanding, but she was just 10 out of 10. So she goes over, massive success over in America, ends up at Napoli. And I think Ella was saying she's at Roma now. So like in terms of soccer development, absolutely amazing. And again, just a lovely, lovely person, lovely human
not, being. Not to name clubs there. So we're kind of, I won't say going off a different way with this, but so she was at a club in England, we won't name it, but like, what were they supportive of it? I don't know, because I don't want to really name drop them, they were supportive or not. But like, what do you find with clubs basically as a whole in England?
Yeah, it's very mixed. I think on the girls' side, it's probably a little bit different on the guys' side in the fact that, and it's understandable, these girls have come through the RTC from a young age and potentially could make it to the first team. I'd say on the whole, they are pretty supportive of the players, but you know as well as I do, Chris, that we have a large number each year who we can't or we don't publicise because of the level they play at and the clubs they're involved in. And it's a really good point you make because, again, there was AXA and Molly Sharp who both came from the same club. And Molly's obviously doing great things at Crystal Palace. And I always look at Molly as an example in the fact that I went to go and see her. She was in, I think, the fourth tier at the time. Of England, but I could see at 17, 18 that with 3 or 4 years in America, training every day, I think she was training twice a week at that time. She had everything in the locker to get to the next level. And America pushed her on. She was an All-American at Barry University, and I think they made the Elite Eight a couple of times. And that pushed her on to the next level football-wise, and she came back. She did a Masters at Durham and is now at Crystal Palace doing great things there in the Women's Championship. As you say, that's the best part about what we do. One, it's obviously helping players with the dream of becoming a student athlete, but then seeing them go on to, whether it's football or whether it's in a work environment, going on and kind of fulfilling that dream is pretty special.
It's like Molly, she's from Bradford and she lived in Miami for 4 years. Like that just itself, like the experience of that. And then obviously the football's developed and she's playing Crystal Palace now. And like you say, she's got, she went to Durham before and stuff like that. But yeah, it's like, I mean, I always remember when we first met, you were saying like the women's side of things. And obviously Jed were really like really enthusiastic about it. It's going to be massive. And I used to tell people all the time, I remember a football agent I used to meet with on a bi-monthly basis for a coffee, and he used to tell me like, oh, I'm getting the women's game because it's gonna be huge. And I was just like, I could see it but not really see it. I didn't think it was going to be like as big as it is now. Like, and it's, you look at TV, it's like Sky Sports, you've got women commentators, you've got pundits, you've got the women's game on like BBC, like live games, Sky. It's just unbelievable compared to 5 years, let's say 6-7 years ago when we first met, like to now, it's probably gone the way you thought it would go, which is great.
Yeah, and it's probably got even bigger than I thought it would do, to be honest, especially the last 2 or 3 years. And I think what you're seeing now is these girls that 7 or 8 years ago were just starting out, who are coming through, and we always talk about it at events like 15, 16, and it's no disrespect to the girls kind of 6 or 7 years ago, but these girls that are coming through now have been playing at a high level for such a long time that when you're going into, and it's something obviously we always explain to players, is the fact that physically going over to America, it's a big change from over here. It's going to be hard work, but I think we've definitely closed the gap on that side. And then you see the players that are coming back. You've got, obviously, Alessia Russo at Man United, Lottie Wubermoy, Anna Patton at Arsenal, who were at University of North Carolina and South Carolina, and they're coming back and going straight in at first team level, which I don't think would have happened a few years ago. So the women's game has certainly transformed over the last 6 or 7 years, which has been really good to see.
Yeah, and like Leah Galton and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, Leah's doing, obviously, she was a standout at Hofstra, and then obviously Rachel Daly as well, who's doing great things with the national team with England. So it's great to be a part of, and we're a part of it at a really good time as well, and it's really exciting.
Tell me if I'm wrong, because obviously I'm kind of out, I work with the men's side, but I used to think that the America was definitely the pathway for women from England. Would you say it's not as much now, but still important?
I would say it still is.
Yeah.
Because the level over here has gone up with obviously the WSL and the majority of the FA Women's Championship now are full-time, basically. At 17, 18, it's tough to break into the first team. So obviously, firstly, those top-level players, what they'll do is they'll go away. One, they'll get a degree. And two, they'll obviously play football at a very high level. And then at 22, 23, they're more ready to come back into the first team. And then as we talked about with players like Molly Sharp or even girls that are at grassroots level, it gives you that time to push on to the next level. And I think it's still the case over here in the fact that you've got two choices, really. You go to university and potentially put football on the back burner, or you play football at a high level and probably not get a degree. Whereas obviously over there, you get the best of both worlds. And it's, as I say, that's something we always talk about at the events that we run.
I'd agree with that, Chris, in so much as I think over here, they're now seeing girls coming back who've been over to America and playing at a wide variety of levels that they probably wouldn't have been good enough to play at that level if they'd stayed in the UK. So I think in terms of development of the girls' game, people see going over to America for 4 years as a massive plus, because, I mean, you know, the Americans, the one area where they are good is they're incredibly fit. Technically, they don't necessarily understand the game as well as us Brits do, though they're coming on in that particular department. But it's one of the things we talk to the girls, you know, I was mentioned earlier about I give people the upside and the downside. And it's not really a downside, but you are treated like a pro over there. So you're training every day. And the girls are not used to that, so they have to be prepared for it because it's really, really tough. But you can, Jonathan prepares them, he'll give them a plan before they go across there that gives them a fighting chance of getting off to a good start. And so is it really a downside to be treated like a professional? At first, 4 weeks was incredibly tough. But I have never, ever, ever been as fit as I was when I was over in the States. So is it really a downside? Not if you can see the benefits of it.
Yeah, yeah. So what, Jed, when you're talking to parents at events, you're kind of the man on the ground. John's obviously usually busy popping around and getting things done. What's the kind of typical questions parents ask you? I mean, probably the same on the guy side, but I'm interested to know what you typically get asked.
Well, I guess they're questions that you wouldn't come as a surprise. You know, how does the scholarship system work? If my daughter gets a scholarship, she goes over there, she gets injured in the first month and she's out for the full season, can she lose a scholarship? All the sorts of things that as a parent you would be concerned about. And, you know, my role is to try and reassure them that, you know, when they go over there, we talk about they're going over there and they're treated like a professional footballer. Lots of our girls have had injuries. They're treated like professional footballers. The standard of care that they get, Chloe Bellaby, if she was sitting with me, would tell you the standard of care she's got while she's been over there was every bit as good as the best quality standard she would have got over here.
And explain what's wrong with her, but what diagnosis she's had, and if she won't mind us saying, obviously.
No, she won't, because we talk about her at every sort of training session. She had mental health issues before she played for us at Harrogate Town, and she overcame those. She's raised lots of money for mine. She's walked from Leeds to London in the driving rain, raised tens of thousands of pounds. She went over to America I think it was at the end of her first year, she contracted MS and was told she'd never play football again. So this is a girl who's overcome mental health issues, has a year in the States, finds she's got MS and is told she'd never play football again. At the end of her second year, she'd had a full season of football. She was voted New Jersey Woman of the Year. And this year she finished a degree. And it was amazing. She finished it about a week ago. And in the last game, the score was level at full time. First period of added time, it was still level. And in the last second of the last bit of overtime, she headed it into the back of the net. What a great end to her career. And again, in terms of personal development, grassroots player, went over to America, got loads of awards, overcame some pretty severe difficulties. A great sort of role model for any girls that we send over there. And we've got international players that are over in America, but we've got grassroots players as well. There's an opportunity for all sort of skill levels. And it's one of the things that, again, they ask at our events, because sometimes there'll be a development girl playing alongside, like at the weekend, playing alongside an England international. And does she go away thinking, oh, I'm not really, I'm not as good as her. And all the girls at that event at the weekend are good enough. But I talk about square pegs and square holes. And I talk up Jonathan and I say, look, the relationship that he has with coaches in the States, it's not easy, but it's fairly straightforward to get a soccer scholarship for your daughter, but to get the right soccer scholarship for your daughter is a heck of a lot more complicated.
Well, it's like as a company as a whole, we talk about the right fit, don't we? And obviously Don in the US and them guys all, collectively as a company now, we can get to any coach, can't we? So if John's struggling, I'm sure you can speak to somebody who's the best friend with that other coach. You know what I mean? It's really the staff we've got now, in our phone book, so to speak, and on our email system is mental. But yeah, so I was just going to ask you a quick question. I'm not sure if you'll know this answer, but it's like the US, well, you find, obviously the US is looked upon like as the next route, but some people don't want to go to America. What's the UK university system like compared to England? Just to kind of give a idea. I do think you've got an idea about it, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're looking at sort of reverse engineering, if you like, and recruiting American girls to come across to the UK. The standard of football at university level over here wouldn't be as high as college level over in the States. That would be my opinion. But it's something that they're trying to improve. And the university that we're involved with, Leeds Beckett, have got a very good soccer setup. And it's one of the things that, you know, you know what it's like. You see different players. We've got girls coming back from America. And we're now looking at, well, can we come up with something for them in terms of a master's? If they want to do it over in America, great. But if they want to do it in the UK, can we come to some arrangement with Leeds Beckett and come up with a package that works for the girls when they come back? And it is one of the things that we talk to parents about. We don't just sign your daughter up and that's it. They become part of the Sports Recruiting USA family. And generally speaking, you look after the members of your family, and that's what we do. So we help them when we help them get a soccer scholarship, first of all. We then try and make
Make sure you have good internet, Jed.
When you get to America, they're everything. They need any help in terms of putting a CV together or finding opportunities in the UK. We can help them with that as well. So it's, you know, it's a moving feast, but you know, I hope that gives a little bit of an insight.
Well, yeah, it's like you said before, square pegs in square holes and stuff like that. And it's like, I mean, we're kind of, I get told off all the time by our guys, because when we do a presentation, you're showing them the best universities, you're talking about players, like, oh, I've signed England nationals, like captains of this youth team, blah, 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 blah. So there's lads out there who are grassroots thinking, well, I'm not good enough for this.
Yeah.
But there is a place for everyone. And within reason, there's a place for everyone. And people have got to understand that it's about from the start giving realistic expectations of, and to be honest with you, I've got older now. I think I'm a bit, obviously I'm a bit more tired because of kids. I'm more brutally honest and like kind of straight to the point, I think, with players and telling them like, look, this is what you're going to expect. And I try to like kind of tee people up to not to have the expectations too high. And they might give you a hit list and you say, look, not happening. Like that's just not, and you explain why. It's not just, it's not trying to knock them down and say you're a rubbish player. They're just, the academics are important, the football ability is important, the timing's important, and all that sort of stuff like that. So, John, is there anything like on the women's side? Have you? I don't know. I wouldn't say like, have you thought a player? You've got a player before who's thought not quite of a level, but's really surprised you.
Well, yeah, definitely, and it's players, as you say, who come from probably not that top level. But see, there's something about them, and yeah. Again, it's. As we always talk about the right fit, for me, and like you get it on the guy side as well, people obviously want to push for Division One. And like I always say, I've got no issue with players pushing for Division One. And I think from my side, obviously I went to Division Two. You obviously went through the junior college route, Chris. So between us, we've got a pretty good handle on kind of those other levels. And for me, obviously if players want to go D1 and not that level, I've got absolutely no issue with them doing that. But there's so many other levels out there. And for me, University of Montevallo is the perfect fit. And again, it's something we always talk about at events is small university. I enjoyed the feel of kind of knowing people on campus, knowing your teachers, knowing your tutors. My brother Duncan, who's obviously not interested in sport whatsoever, he's the brains of the family. He did basically a sandwich year. So he went to Lancaster University, then Kentucky University before finishing up at Lancaster. And I went to visit him on spring break one year. And like the University of Kentucky is like a city within itself. And don't get me wrong, that's what some people are looking for, which you've got no problem with. But for me, I would have got lost within that environment. So when we talk about, as you say, players that I guess surprise you and things like that, it all comes down to looking to get the right fit. Now we don't. I'm not going to sit here and say I get the right fit every time. But we give ourselves the best opportunity for the girls and the guys to have the best experience.
But you're always there. Just to jump in there, you're always there. If you don't get the right fit, you're always there afterwards to kind of help them if they need to. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And we know that players do transfer and they transfer for different reasons. And if they need help with that, we help them on both the guys and the girls side. But I was, like, until you explain about the different levels and the fact that it's a quality level, whatever you go into, I was really surprised at the level of D2 soccer. And as I say, those first 3 or 4 weeks during pre-season, I'd done some tough pre-seasons. I remember doing one under Warren Joyce when I was under 16 at Leeds, and we trained with the under 17s. And after 5 days, I just went home and stayed in bed all day and felt ill because I'd done so much running. But it was nothing compared to America. When you're training in the, you're doing obviously, when you first get there, you've got fitness tests and in the morning, then you're training in the evening. I'd never really done 2 days.
And the heat.
And the heat of the deep south in Alabama, which was, you walk outside and you're sweating straight away. So we trained early in the morning, late in the evening, obviously out of the kind of the sun and the heat, even though it was still really hot. But as we kind of talked about before, those first 3 or 4 weeks were probably the toughest, but I'd never been fitter physically. Yeah. And I think that's why it took my game to the next level. And I think it's why, obviously on the guy side, it'll push you to that next level. And it's why on the girl side, for 3 or 4 years, if you want to become a professional afterwards, it's the route to take. And all the players do deep down, I hated pre-season. But as I say, I knew that at the end of it, it would push me to that next level, and it would help me score goals, and it would help me get in positions to score goals. And I think that was probably one of the main differences for me going over there, was that first pre-season.
Yeah. It's like Google's probably the worst tool really for this, because obviously people, like, when they start the process or before it, they Google what's the best places to go. So they'll come to you, like I said, I mentioned before, the hit list. And it's not always, like I said, it's about the right fit. We know the levels. There's good teams and bad teams in every single division. I mean, if you look at the commitments versus the men's versus women's, a lot of the guys from the UK end up going to junior college. And that's academic reasons. And there's a lot more competition on the men's side to get a college roster spot. On the women's, there's a lot more spaces, I feel, and you probably will back me up on that. So, like, if you're a female footballer, there's definitely a place for you, and it's like you probably get multiple options. If you hear me, then it went weird. But what I'm trying to say there is, on the women's side, if you're thinking about this, if you listen to this right now and not thinking about it, there's a lot of options out there. There's just not enough supply for the demand. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say so, and I think the gap is definitely closing again. And I guess with COVID and everything on that side, because everybody's got an extra year, especially these next 3 or 4 years, there'll probably be a bit of a backup with regards to players. But something that I always look back to was, obviously, the girls that we sent over last year, there was just under 40 from the UK. And I think probably this August just gone would be the toughest, in the fact that those seniors who get the extra year, and we placed all the girls again, like we do every year. And it's just grafting and working hard to get that right fit, because there is opportunities out there. And as long as a player, you are willing to work hard, push yourself, and you want to earn a degree, which we always talk about is the main thing, there'll be opportunities for you without any shadow of a doubt.
And sorry, Jed, you want to say anything?
Can I give you an example? I mean, Jonathan will remember this player, Amy. I think it was Amy Drew. When she first came to us, she was quite small, and but looked pretty good technically. Over a period of about 3 years, she came to loads of events and she made friends with lots of girls at those events. I used to talk her through a game because I felt I had a lot more confidence in her than she had herself. And I saw her grow over 3 years as a footballer and as a person. And it was, I thought, quite apt that at the last showcase, Jonathan had her down as captain of one of the teams. And there was a reason for that, because by that time, she was so confident. She was a bit like, well, Stevie G, really. She'd get on the balls, and distribution was first class. And I used to talk to her when I was refereeing. Now, I know you're not supposed to, Chris, but, and I would say, you know, if I was playing against you, Amy, I'd hate you to be on the ball, because every time you get it, you're causing me problems. So just get on the ball as much as you can. And that's what she did. And she went over to America, and about 3 weeks after season had started, Jonathan sent me a video of somebody putting a ball in the top corner. And I couldn't quite make out who it was. And I contacted him and said, it was Amy. And I thought it was a great story because, you know, she developed so much over that period of 3 years. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And that's, as you say, Chris, that's, we talked about earlier, it's helping players, both boys and girls, through this process and seeing them grow and get better as players, but seeing them grow as people, which is probably the most rewarding out of everything. She's doing really well. She had a great season at Goshen College his first year. As you say, scored a few goals and has been playing week in, week out. So yeah, she's just one of a large number of players that we've helped that is doing really well.
On the subject of players, Chris,
Yep. Can
I just ask Jonathan a question, just for a couple of funnies?
Yeah.
Can you tell them the story about Tavi and when he came for the trial? And then tell them the story about the how unlucky you were in year four when the goalkeepers, you know, you ended up with no goalkeepers and how you got through that challenge.
Yeah, so Tavi's a good story. So it was my third year. And again, the scholarship had opened up relatively late in the day. We had a Brazilian called Lucas who was on the team. Coach was needing a player. So Lucas said, oh, I've got this lad from Brazil called Tavi. And we were like, right, brilliant. So we'd probably done, I think we might have even started the season. I think it was that late. We were kind of 3 weeks in. And Lucas went and got Tavi from the airport and we were all out ready for training. And this lad turns up, must have been about, probably giving him a few inches here. It must have been about 5'5" with a baseball cap on backwards and massive baggy jeans. And we were like, who is this guy? And as it transpired, he ended up being the best technical player that I've ever seen. We played, probably one of my best memories was we played against Lees McRae in the Elite Eight in either, I think it was North or South Carolina. It was freezing cold. And Tavi and Lucas, bless them, we were, obviously as English players, we had kind of short sleeves on and shorts. The coach had to go and buy them like long sleeve underarmors. And they basically wore gloves and taped the gloves around. And we were lining up. And the opposition team had an English lad. And we remember looking over and he was laughing and pointing at Tavi. And it was one of the best performances that I'd ever seen from a player that day for Tavi. And it just goes to show, like, size isn't everything on the football side of things with regards to kind of the strength on the ball. Technically, he was absolutely quality. But when he first turned up that first session, we were like, Lucas, who have you brought here? And we couldn't get near him for 2 years, the last 2 years I was there. And then, yeah, final year, we got a bit unlucky.
Nice. It was amazing. A couple of keepers
that were injured. And we had a really good technical keeper called Dave Esser, who was, again, probably no bigger than 5'6". So obviously, as a goalkeeper-wise, within the men's game, he was targeted pretty much every game. But again, technically, what a keeper. We managed to get to the last 32 in the nation that year with Dave in goal. And it was one of those, again, where you could see that when we turned up and opposition players were like, oh, my gosh, so small as a keeper, but technically a great spring and, again, a quality keeper. And those are the memories, I guess. I guess one memory that I do remember as well was, I think it was my second year. We were coming towards the end of kind of regular season conference play. And we were playing on must have been a Friday evening. And we were at home. We had two games at home. And just sat there watching the girls, look over to my left. And who's there? It's my dad, without even telling me that he was coming over. Came over just for the weekend, I think Thursday through to Monday. Watched two games. Lucky enough, we got two wins. And I think from a parent side of things, you can obviously talk a little bit more. But it's those memories that I remember. Just those trips able to come over and watch us play. Obviously, we travel the length and breadth of the UK, haven't we, up until the age of 18, 19. I don't think you've probably missed a game for me playing. And that obviously, that support was invaluable to me as a player. And it was a little bit different when we went over to America. But the opportunity as a parent to come out and I guess see the university and the environment was pretty special.
Were the games streamed then?
Sorry, Chris.
Probably not.
The games, Jed, when you were home, because obviously it's a long time ago now, but were they streamed online? Could you watch them online?
Some of them were. I remember you put in, you remember the goalkeeper taking a goal kick? It came straight to you and you popped it straight back over his head, John. Who was that against?
Yeah, that was Lees McRae as well.
Yeah, that was in a big game.
And not your own keeper, the opposition keeper. I thought you meant on goal.
Another funny story about that game is my uncle was watching for one of the first times. As you say, it was live streamed. And a lot of people, obviously, substitutions work a lot differently in America in the fact that if you come off, you can go back on. So I think the coach, we were 2-0 up about 5 minutes before half-time and coach brought me off for a bit of a breather. And then, obviously, I went back on in the second half. My uncle thought that was it, turned it off.
There's little things like that people don't realise, isn't there? But
Chris, just one thing on that, because again, it's one of the things that we talk to the parents about. We say, look, take it from us, or take it from the girls that are talking to you. This is a life changer for your daughter. But it's also something that we encourage the parents, obviously, to get involved with as much as they possibly can, because you probably gathered, I really enjoyed it as well. It was a great experience. So,
yeah, that's one of my points, Jed. I was going to ask you, actually. I was going to say, like, from a parent's point of view, like, it's obviously the child's doing this, but parents love it as well. Like you say, yeah, like, you were probably an example, like, prime example of that. And it's something to enjoy the process, like taking them to showcase events, taking them to trial events, going through the process of getting offers, being part of that conversation with the coaches, deciding where to go, going with your kid across, helping them settle in, and then watching them online and stuff like that. And I think for me, it's like, it's a massive part of it. I mean, it's disappointing when some parents don't get involved. I think they're missing a trick, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And one little story, Chris, bear in mind, when Jonathan was at Leeds, he used to train about 5 miles away, so it was a 10-minute drive. They got through to the Nationals, Orange Beach, West Florida, and I flew over there, and by a country mile, the furthest I've ever gone to watch him play football. So we flew to Atlanta, 9-hour flight. I drove down to Orange Beach, 8-hour drive, got out of the car, and in the semi-final, Jonathan had a header. They hit the underside of the crossbar, came out, they went up the other end and scored in the last second. And, you know, it is a beautiful game, but sometimes it's quite sad as well. And that was the furthest that I'd ever gone to watch him play football. And it was a great experience, though.
So. Probably the nicest setting as well.
Yeah.
It was. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Bradford City away. But so, like, just kind of going on, you mentioned it briefly, but the timelines, you can't really do what you did, John, like, come 3 months, like 3 months before. I mean, there are possibilities depending on your levels and all these sort of varieties. But now, this is obviously many years later. What's the kind of typical answer you give to people when to start this process?
I say ideally 18 months. A year to 18 months gives us plenty of time to work with them and obviously get the processes in place. As you say, we now, on the guys and the girls side, we run two showcase events a year. So that gives players three, possibly four opportunities to play in front of coaches, which is really important.
Yeah.
And as I say, I remember I did nothing on the admission side. That was all left to my dad to sort out. But I still remember quite clearly, like, him pulling his hair out of the computer, like, trying to sign me up to the university and get me through the NCAA eligibility centre, which took a lot longer than it should have done, which actually meant I missed four games at the start of my first year. So now, especially with obviously the girls and the guys, I'm like, as soon as they're verbally committed or they've signed on the dotted line, it's a case of, right, get signed up for the NCAA, get through that process as quick as possible. Because I guess the main part of what we do, obviously, is with the middle people between players, parents and coaches, but there is so much more that goes on behind the scenes. We chat late at night, don't we? And we message kind of all day, every day, about if we've got any questions or anything like that. So there's a lot of work that goes into it. And as I think my dad mentioned, like, it's not too difficult, and that's why some people do it themselves. It's not too difficult to get offers, but the hardest thing is to get a university that is the right fit and ticks as many boxes on that tick list as possible.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, on the men's side, I typically tell people, because there's much more competition to do it, like, try and start in year 10 or 11, because the GCSEs is the last completed education you've got to work with. And if we can give them a carrot to do well, I mean, they're with us a long time, and we get a lot of players now signing up in year 10 or 11, which does sound early, but people are switched on more social media. They see it a bit earlier than we did, I guess. But why do you think it's important? So, like, in terms of having a parent involved, so throughout the company, people don't probably realise there's a lot of people like Jed. There's Don Williams, who's helped his son go through the process before, and he's been a former college coach. You've got his son Brad, obviously. And then there's Jed, there's parents involved, there's a variety of parents involved who've helped the kids go through. So why do you think that's important, having, like, just, obviously we're not young, but we're kind of the consultant type people, but having that sort of other side of it on in the ecosystem, so to speak? Why do you think it's important?
I think, again, I don't know what other companies do, but when we come to the showcase, we're very, very fortunate. Over the years, we've had parents also that have come along. It's easy enough for me to say, we'll do this, that, and the other. But when you've got a parent, and I'm thinking like Paul Scully, who's been to events before, Taylor Scully's done, I think Nigel Hudson, I think David Winterburn, who's been very involved in girls football, his daughter went to North Carolina. Sometimes what they have to say is even more powerful than what I have to say, but it's very much that, you know, you will become part of the family. And we always thank the parents at trial events. And I can't think, I mean, maybe we're lucky, or maybe it's the girls, but the parents that we deal with are very, very supportive, understanding, and you know, great to work with, really. And again, we keep in touch with them. Jonathan's got a good relationship with all the girls and their parents. But it's great when we have a showcase event for a parent to come along and give a testimonial that says what Sports Recruiting USA say they're going to do, they do. Simple as.
And that's why we try to keep all the testimonials online kind of like open and public, really. We've probably had really positive feedback on the guys and the women's side. And I might be biased from a company founder part of view, but I'd say the women's side for SIUSA is probably the main company in the world. I'd say, like, as a whole, like, it's probably like top there. The guys is a bit more competitive, and I'm not going to like lie and say we're the top in terms of just the guy side, but we are obviously very good. But how would you compare yourselves on the, let's say, well, the company as a whole, but the women's side as well? How would you compare yourselves to other companies out there? And don't get me wrong, there's good companies, so we're not going to start naming people and stuff like that. It's just give you, here's a minute to kind of say what's good.
Just in case Jonathan's really modest again.
Yeah.
We have had a number of people that have come to us after they've used other companies who've badly let them down. Now, I'm not saying that that's every company, but I'm not aware that in the last 8 years we have had anyone that's left us and gone the other way. We've had plenty that have come to us and said, you know, the company that we're working with, they said they'd provide a really good quality video. It's been absolutely shambolic. They aren't helping us in terms of universities in America, a whole host of things. And, you know, as I say, you know, we are pretty keen to ensure that parents understand that we will help them go through the process and make it as straightforward as possible. And Jonathan's role in that is critical because he's got the contacts over in America. But, you know, we love competition, to be fair. The more competition, the more girls football is going to develop. But we'd like to think that the competition we're operating in a professional way. So, over to you, John.
No, yeah, I think one of the main things is, and it is something we, I guess, which evolved over COVID, is the fact that when COVID struck, and we, both on the boys and the girls side, we've always run really successful showcase events where coaches get the opportunity to watch players play live. And we weren't just going to sit back and kind of miss that opportunity. So we obviously, December 2020, streamed the event, both on the boys and the girls side. And again, that was a game changer in the fact that I think the response that we had both from the boys and the girls coaches was so positive. And the production that was put together put us on that next level. And there was other companies out there who just kind of filmed it and sent it off, which there's no problem with, but we wanted to go to that next level. And the streaming of those showcases, and again, the response that we've already had for this coming December showcase on the girls' side has been amazing. And I think that's the proof that coaches trust us as people, in the fact that if we say we've got a player for them, they know to take a serious look, which is really important. And they know that when they come over to see our events, they're going to see quality players. So I think And again, it comes down to the girls that we've had that have gone over there that have been really successful. Those success stories are the ones at the forefront of the company on both the men's and the women's side. And we've been, you don't want to say you've been very lucky, because we've obviously, we work hard at what we do, but those girls and on the guy side as well, really just, I think, put us at the forefront of everything that we do. And the fact that they want to come back and they want to volunteer their time to come to events and speak with players and parents, and they'll drive kind of an hour, 2 hours to get to an event to do that is pretty special. And we sometimes laugh, don't we, saying, oh, it's SIUSA family, it's a bit cheesy and things like that, but it is pretty special. And for me, that side of it, kind of staying in contact with the players all the way through, helping them all the way through, allows them to come back and say what a great experience they've had.
Yeah, that's well put by both of you, to be fair. Like you say, we tried, I mean, financially, it costs a lot more to put that showcase on than it would do if we just recorded it with a camera. Like, it does cost a lot more money. We are financially a lot, I mean, comparing to other companies, we're a lot cheaper than vast majority of companies for the particular service that we do. So it just shows you that you're putting back into it, where you could easily keep that in the company and not spend it on the players, but you want the best for the players, which like, I agree with you, the production and everything, which I took your lead on it, and I'm glad I did. And we've done two showcases each since then, and it's the level of production is brilliant, and like I say, it's the place to go for it. But anything you want to add to that before I just quickly move on? So we're going to round, kind of finish up in about 5 minutes.
Now, the one message I'd want to leave with the girls and the parents is, what have you got to lose by looking at the opportunity? You've nothing to lose. You'll not be pressurized into making a decision. Parents won't be pressurized into paying anything. Come along, see what it's all about. And then if it's not for you, fine. And if you want to come to other events to learn more about it, that's great. That would give parents and players.
Yeah. John, do you want to add anything there?
No, I think my dad's touched upon it really well there. We're not a company that gives deadlines or pushes players and parents into making that decision. We've had girls who've come to kind of 7, 8, 9 events and then made a decision it's what they want to do. All the trial events and ID camps are free to attend. And it's about those players and parents and guardians as well, getting that information. So you get all that information and then you can make a decision from that.
Yeah. So what's the future of... We'll talk specifically about the women's in the UK side of it. How do you want it to go? What's the future?
I think we've continued to grow. Obviously, we've continued to grow in numbers. But I think we've also continued to grow the quality of people that we have involved. As I guess you'd always like to, as I say, expand with regards to numbers and things like that. But I think we need to be careful that we offer a great service. And the last thing we want to do is change in any way the service that we offer.
Dilute it.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, we're in a really good position in the fact that we have good players, we have great players. And as you say, on the girl side, it's about finding the right fit for those players. And we want to continue to basically do that over the coming years and continue to push the women's game. Whether that's players going over to America or whether it's things like, obviously we've got great partnerships over here with This Girl Kicks who do tours over to America, which we'll be looking to get involved in. Great partnership with She Kicks, the magazine, who continue to push the women's game. And it's not just about, I guess, getting girls over to America, it's about pushing the game over here as well, which is really important.
I think you're a quite important part of that, because it's increasing the players' levels, because they are going away to improve. So if you look throughout the leagues, as players who played in the college system, and let's cut to 5 years from now, a lot more of our players will have been that WSL and that national team level, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And ideally, it'd be good if we could have maybe one player who comes back who scores the winner in a World Cup final. That'd be quite nice. we can hang it up right there and go home happy.
And then you can retire. That's it.
Retire gracefully.
You and Jed go golfing.
Well, I think one of the things as well, Chris, that I would add to that is as girls have gone over and come back, I mean, like Ella, who came to our event on at the weekend, just a first-class representative for Sports Recruiting USA. And we are all always trying to think of ways that we can improve what we do and the service that we provide. And it helps when you've got outstanding people. There are other girls as well that are over there that John and I talk about that, you know, you have absolutely no issues with them being ambassadors for the company and trying to find ways to help them financially as much as you can to develop the girls' game.
Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, we don't really talk about is like the Dan Abrahams Academy we've got. So you've got the service part of it, like, yeah, you look after them, and John's got a lot of connections, the company's got a lot of connections, and the caring side of it that you guys do, which is brilliant. But the tangible things, like I said, the Dan Abrahams Academy, which is a sports psychology academy online that we have, the world's leading sport psychologist has given us to let our players work on that side of things, which is massively important in my eyes. You've got all that sort of things. Even when we're out there, we've got things in place for like jobs with Challenger Sports. We've got a lot of things in place. So, yeah, SIUSA Women's Soccer UK is the place to come. Nowhere else. All right. That's. I mean, we can kind of finish up there. Is there anything you want to finish on? Is there anything you want to add?
Nothing that I'd want to add, other than to thank all the girls that come to our events and the parents who, like me, have driven their daughters or sons to various football training sessions and matches over the years. Well done, parents.
Well done, parents. Yeah, there we go. we'll finish on that. But yeah, thank you guys. That's been really informative. I don't know how long it was, but yeah. So what's the best way to get in touch with both of you, really, and as the division as a whole?
Yeah, the best way is obviously we've got the website, sportsrecruitingusa.com. If anybody's is listening or watching this and is interested in coming to an event, there's an event section on there. There's an application section as well. Everything's obviously on the UK side, comes through myself. So fill out an application, come to an event, and basically just get that information. As we've said before, if it's not what you want to do, then there's no problem with that. You've got the info. But obviously I'm a little bit biased. For me, it's the opportunity of a lifetime. Seems a long time ago now, but it seems like a little bit of a dream, to be honest. And it goes by so fast. But what an opportunity you've got to play football at a high level, study for a degree, and get one of the best life experiences. For me, it's a no-brainer, but as I say, I'm a little bit biased.
You're not biased. Jed, how do people get in touch with you? For any parents out there want to ask that parent question?
Well, just through Jonathan, really. I'm really, I guess, MC when it comes to the events, and I talk to parents and we give them a chance to ask questions before the game, talk to us during the games, and we always make a point of having a debrief at the end to ask any, you know, answer any other questions that they've got.
You failed to mention as well, Jed, you've got Twitter now, you've got Instagram. What about them handles? People can contact
you
on there.
That's right. You can contactable on all those now. And I'm on those, not quite as much as Jonathan, but not a million miles away. Yep. But it's great. I mean, when Jonathan went over to America, he had Skype and that was it. And that's another point, you know, in terms of communication, even though you're on the other side of the world, you know, we spoke more to Jonathan when he was in America than we did when he was
upstairs in his bedroom. Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, so I think Jed's probably got at Jed Maloney as his tag usernames, and John's at Player of the Decade, I think it is. No, at John Maloney.
John Maloney, I think it is.
Number 9. There we are. Twitter. So that's it. Right. Thanks everyone for listening. Like I say, if anybody is interested in the women's side of things or asking any questions, we'll leave some stuff in the description. Any questions at all, you know where we are as a company, give us a shout. That's it. Thanks, guys.
All the best.